You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Hello, welcome to part two of our conversation about unlocking calf growth with the right milk replacer choices, with experts from Nucamel, the world's first milk replacer producer, as well as some great advice from our Mole Valley Farmers team. If you've liked what you've heard so far in part one, we're getting even more into the detail in this next episode. That's coming right now on the Mole Valley Farmers podcast.
There are many, many different milk powders on the market, and obviously it's part of my job to look at and understand what is out there and how it works, and ensure that our range is fit for purpose, and we are giving our customers the best of the best, really, is what we're looking at. Pricing is another thing. There's a huge range of prices between all the different milk powders on the market, and I can understand from a farmer's perspective, looking at this wide range of prices and products which maybe seem a little bit similar on the surface. So where do you even begin to choose, and how do you understand why there's hundreds of pounds a ton even in difference in prices between what seems outwardly a fairly similar product? And I think it's important to note that sometimes there might not be immediately an obvious reason of why there is a difference, and we kind of have to sort of investigate and dig a little bit deeper. And certainly this is something which your nutritionist or your agri specialist will be able to help you with. But I think the best place to begin is the label, the bag label of the product that it is that we're looking at. Again, there's always a little bit more to it than maybe first meets the eye. And I think a lot of people probably just start off looking at the protein and the fat content, and whether it is a skim or not a skim or just a whey-based powder. And that's probably quite as far as I'll go. But we'll need to look a little bit deeper to really understand about the product and the level of quality and what it's actually going to offer our calves. So if we look at the ingredients, so they're firstly listed in descending order. So the ingredients at the top of the list are the ones that are in the highest quantity, as we get right down to the ingredients in the smallest quantities at the bottom end. We'll also see on that label, we'll see the composition. So protein, as I already mentioned, typically we want that somewhere between 22 and 26%. And again, the protein that we would choose, as Drew has said, will depend on the type of rearing system that we're looking for, whether we're looking for beef calves or we're at the other end of the scale. We've got some really high performance heifer calves, which we need to really drive some good fast frame growth as well. And we're going to be looking for predominantly milk proteins as well, where we can do the indication of quality is another thing that we could look out for. In terms of oil or fat, whichever we want to call it, we're looking for somewhere between 16 and 20% usually. There are a number of products out on the market which higher fat levels, and again can be a little similar issue that I mentioned earlier with whole milk feeding is can depress that desire of the calf to go looking out for other food sources. So thinking about your calf starter intake, as I mentioned earlier, it's really important that we get those calves onto that hard feed as soon as possible so we can wean them successfully. So what we can see sometimes with higher fat or very high fat milk replacers is that we can have a bit of a check at weaning or delayed weaning as well. And, you know, we want to get those calves moved on as quickly as possible. So it's something to bear in mind. Next, a little bit further down the composition line, we've got fibre. So again, we typically want quite a low fibre inclusion. So ideally sort of low, below 0.15% is really where we're looking at. And that would indicate that there are higher quality proteins within that milk replacer. So where we are using predominantly milk proteins, that tends to deliver a lower fibre percentage. Where we're using a lot of vegetable proteins, that tends to drive that fibre percentage up. Also on the label there, you'll see ASH content. So we really needs to be lower than 8%. 8% would be the absolute maximum. Anything over 8% really needs to be avoided. This can be causing a risk of scours, and part of the reasoning for that is due to the osmolality of the milk replacer. And the osmolality is essentially the number of particles that are dissolved in fluid. And essentially, the higher the osmolality, it really can affect the water balance in the gut, which can have issues with scours. So typically, high ASH or high lactose can cause problems with that. And it's something that we want to be avoiding. So I think there's probably some top line things you can begin to look at there to build up a picture. But there is a whole lot more below that and into deeper level. And I think maybe Jan and Drew might have some additional insights with their experience that they'll be able to share as well today.
Yeah, good points, Charlotte. So Jan, Charlotte's pointed us in the direction of the important bag label. What kind of ingredients should farmers really be looking out for on those labels?
Yeah, that's... That's already on the question alone, a whole podcast, I think. This is a tough one. And I have to go back a bit into the history again of our industry. Because farmers might think, why are we talking about skim and we talk about whey and WPC and so on. And when I came into the business, because I was coming really from the feed side, I remember entering the Nicamel office and they showed me some raw materials and some products, and they're all white products. They all look white. They all look the same. So what in essence is the difference then between those? And if we go back in the good old days, so to say, we were producing butter, we were producing cheese, and that was about it, you know. We know whey was the waste product and so on. But if you go today into the supermarket and you look around on the products, there's probably hardly any product where you don't find whey. So in all kinds of applications, the cookies, meat industry, the industry found a lot of applications for our dairy products. Let's say, Fortunately, because that is adding value to the business, at the end of the day, adding value for the farmer, for the milk. That's the whole idea. But if you reason in that, you already understand that since we as an industry work also with those products, the first priority for the food guys, of course, is using the best what they possibly can get. That means the leftovers are coming to us. I'll give one more example. Very recently, Campina built a plant to produce 80,000 tons of lactoferrin. Lactoferrin is a small protein. Actually, it's a large protein, but it's a small proportion in the product, which is strongly antibacterial. It's used in the US, for instance, to conserve food, especially meat products, and it has an incredible value. Of course, when you take it out, it's hardly to recognize, but it is essential in his antibacterial activity. So having said so, all the bits and pieces are important in this. That means on the other side, we have our animal that requires day by day more and more and more from us. We as a company, we are very science-based and science-driven. So when we come up with something, it's proven in our own stables, in our own facilities, where we do trial work with calves, where we see what is it doing and we see the differences between formulas. And indeed, the moment we started to understand this and we say, oh, wow, if this milk is pasteurized at 73.15 seconds, which is a major difference with pasteurizing at 75 or 78 degrees for 20 seconds, which might be needed for the baby food industry or for the chocolate industry, who knows? So for other applications, but it has a huge impact on us. Every farmer here can understand when he pasteurizes his colostrum, we know the impact of temperature on Brix value. When we go from 62 from 60 to 62, it has a huge impact. That's known. The same is true for our milk and our milk components. So the whole value is in actually in how this all has been processed to get the intact value in the back of the milk, let's say, or the milk replacer at the end of the day. And Charlotte is right when she said that we advise 22, 24, 26% protein in a product. But then the next step is, what's the digestibility of this? Because if the digestibility was 95, which should be more or less, or it is 85 because it has been heat damaged. We all know what heat can do on a protein. If you bake your eggs in the morning, you take your full English, then you know what it does with the protein, with the proteins in the pan. So the same is happening with the proteins coming from milk. It changes completely the constitutions. Obviously, it changes completely the performance of the product. So this heat treatment, and how do we check that? For instance, if you look to whey-based products, we check everything for active immunoglobulins because they are very heat sensitive. So for us, it's next to the point that they are antibacterial, but mainly that's also a marker for how the product has been handled. The same goes, and we all know farmers, when we talk about skim-based products, we have 40, 50, 60% products and so on, and say, okay, it's a 60% product. And the skim is important because it clots. Well, wait a minute. The skim only clots if the skim is a low heat type of skim. Because if it's a medium heat or a high heat skim, he doesn't clot anymore because he's damaged in the processing. So again, you might be talking about skim, but it's not the skim you're looking for. So this is all important to go deeper. So first of all, of course, you have the analysis of the product, protein, fat, and so on. But then the choice of the raw materials. And since we understood that, and since we were like really going, oh, how is this processed and so on, and we select based on that in order to reach the target of the farmers, they are going for, let's say, 800 grams and some going to 900 grams of daily gain, and some are even reaching a kilo. We can reach with those products that are well, let's say, tested and well organized, over a kilo a day daily gain. So that is what we are actually trying to develop and work on every day again.
So it's not quite as straightforward exactly as what that ingredient should be. But are there some ingredients there that would be on the list that you might think, okay, if I'm seeing soy flour, oat flour, wheat flour, that's the kind of thing we should be steering away from?
Yes, exactly. So indeed, absolutely right. There are, of course, some no-go zones, let's say, because calves, the first month, first 45 days, can actually are very, very steered to drink milk and to digest milk components. So vegetable components, and then especially vegetable components with what we call anti-nutritional factors, so like a lot of soy products, soy flour in particular. You could go to more refined sources, but if it's like soy flour, indeed, we should stay away from that. The same is true for starches. Many, many starches are sometimes added into the product coming from, it could be wheat starch, it could come, yeah, basically from all vegetable components. Starches are not, let's say, the good energy source that a young calf would need. You know, the calf has to grow real fast, and once he's ready for it, when he's ready by himself, by his development, he will start to move to the feed. And we have, of course, as Charlotte also rightfully said, we wanted to move to eat dry feed, but when he's ready for it, and with the milk replacer there, we definitely would argue against using products like soy flour or like these wheat starches or wheat flours and so on.
So something like skim, whey protein concentrate, hydrolyzed wheat gluten, these are better sources of protein to have in there?
Well, that's a very interesting one because fats are, of course, our first energy source in the product. And dominantly, there are two fat sources used, which is palm oil and which is coconut oil. Palm oil is very powerful, let's say, energy-wise. And coconut oil is a very interesting one because it's a short and medium-chain fatty acid. So he's directly available. He has also, because of the fatty acids, an antibacterial impact, so a natural antibacterial impact. It's one of the first products we started to use to replace antibiotic growth promoters. What it also does, it has a lower melting point, so it makes the product very easy to dilute. So in this way, Nucamel, we as a producer, in most of our products, we have a quite high coconut content, around about 40% of the fat is coming from coconut. And of course, some people raise the thing from, yeah, sustainability, everything related to sustainability and so on. And there I can mention that we are completely on track replacing actually palm oil by rape oil. So that's going to be, again, the next step, the next level where we are heading to have also alternatives available.
Yeah, which sounds like great news, Jan. Away from coconut, soya, sunflower, fat, slightly less good quality, but is it still something that farmers shouldn't shy away from if they see it in there?
Yeah, I would say we have tested, and all these oils have been tested. For the calves, I would stay away from sunflower, because it was clearly negative impact based on the trials that we have done. Rape is a good alternative. Soya can also be a good alternative. So for soy oil, a good quality soy oil. And of course, I'm always talking about good quality products, you know, like refined products and so on. So this is all possible to use. Sunflower, don't ask me why exactly, because we are not completely behind it. But in all the trials we have done, especially on consumption, milk consumption, we had a negative impact.
You're the boss, Jan, but you can't know everything. We all know. So that's one of those things. And as humans, we're always told, eat more seeds. So what about something like linseed? How would that be?
Linseed is... is a very interesting one because linseed is very rich in omega-3, omega-6 fatty acids. So the omega-3, omega-6 fatty acids do have a positive impact on, for instance, immunity and immune building of the animal. So we like to use linseed, and in all our winter formulas, so talking about from September till March, April, linseed is there. You might come up with the question, why not in the summer? Because linseed is has a very low melting point, could be sticky, and in this way, so we have to restrict it for the periods outside the hot summers that we are now. Well, not this year, but sometimes experiencing.
See, you've proven that you do know everything. So for you then, Jan, what would be the best thing about, you know, let's go into a little bit more detail. What goes into making a great bag of milk replacer?
Well, I think that, first of all, you need to know the objective of the farmer. Let's say, is his idea to go to maximum growth, let's say, and he has typically Holsteins, we really have to look at the protein level. We go for 24 or even higher, but let's say 24, 25, that area, because our Holsteins can have a lot of protein and they can really use it very, very good. And you build with this a nice carcass, because it's not, and it's the carcass on one side, but also all the organs. You know, if you look to lungs, if you look to the liver, if you look to the heart, to everything needs protein to build. So therefore, this is key and crucial. This is also supported by many scientific studies, I must say, where we see we go for sufficient protein intake, which you can reach with a, let's say, 24-round type product. Then, together with that, we need, of course, the high levels of the fats levels, let's say, could be, as Charlotte said, 16 to 20, so that should be fine. Composition-wise, raw material-wise, for us is more important how it's been processed. So I was mentioning this low heat treatment. That's the guarantee that we give. And that goes for both for skim and for whey. So it's not so much to say, oh, I want skim or I want whey. Well, it's how it has been treated and how it has been processed. And of course, that's the philosophy of the producer. And that can give that to you. But we cannot say, oh, it has to be skim or it has to be whey. I would say it depends. It's more important is how it's been processed. And there we guarantee that all of this is always low heat treated.
What we're hearing here, Jan, is that Nucamel is doing a lot to improve the quality of this product. So I'm imagining there's a lot of R&D, research and development, going into this.
That's absolutely correct. And if you, it has to do with my background as a nutritionist. I'm very scientific driven, and we spent as a company a hell of a lot of money on investing in trial work and how things are working. And so we have all the time trials by ourselves, testing compositions, new raw material, feeding schedules, and so on. So this is a constant thing. Apart of from that, we work with, let's say, universities, actually worldwide, on these programs. We just actually have patented the working mechanism of how Clostridium operates in the animal. We know Clostridium is an important one, pretty costly, because he acts on our best calves. So also there we try to build up better understanding in the way that we can help and support our farmers, our customers, at the end of the day. It's all data and science driven.
But I guess it has to be that way, doesn't it? Because that early life stage development of the calf is just so important.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more.
Charlotte, we've heard a lot of really fascinating information here from Jan and from Drew. Just round it up for us. What are you taking away from this conversation today?
Well, I think the important place to start, I suppose, as Drew touched on at the beginning, is actually we really need to be looking at that rearing system all the way through, because no matter what milk powder we choose, if we've not got the calf shed set up right in the first place, and we're not following all the protocols as we should be doing, whatever great milk powder we're putting in isn't going to do the job that necessarily it should do. So I think it's really important to spend a bit of time looking at that and talk to your Mole Valley rep. They'll be more than happy to come out and help you, and maybe even just give you some advice about some simple little changes that you can make that actually can make some huge huge differences. And of course, when it comes to actually looking at a milk replacer that we're going to be using, I think it's listening to Jan as well, that the devil is in the detail. There's a lot more to it than perhaps you would think of just looking at the label. It seems like relatively simple stuff, but actually it's hugely complex. And that's why Blees Well Valley would be wanting to work with manufacturers like the team at Nucamel, who are really all over that detail, really truly understand the makeup of the powders and can ensure that whatever is being produced is something that is of the highest quality. It is going to deliver the performance results that we need with calves. So I think it is really getting to that detail, whichever milk powder you're buying or wanting to buy, you know, ask the questions and really understand about how that product is made, how the ingredients are processed and sourced, and really do dig into that detail, because it is really important. And anybody worth their salt will be happy to, even if they don't know the answer, will certainly go out and find out for you and support you with that.
I guess, Drew, that's what you're saying when you're going out on farm, isn't it? Speaking to farmers about this.
Yeah, exactly. I think, as I said before, you can just go on, you can make phone calls and you can buy milk powders from a whole variety of places within the market. But I think, you know, ask the questions, get the relevant support. We are here to help. Obviously, your team at Malt Valley are well trained. But if there's something they don't know, or, you know, they need some more in-depth advice, then, you know, I do spend quite a lot of my time on farm. And I can come out to farm and assist and do everything that I spoke about earlier, you know, to help select the right product to ensure you can achieve your goals. And I say it's not just a one-stop shop. We are here to go on a journey of development, you know, to ensure that we can get to the end goal. So we don't just come and sell a product and then walk away. You know, there's a whole team of people and myself to, you know, work along the journey with you. So ask the questions and get the support you need. You know, don't just buy products off the shelf.
And Jan, any closing thoughts?
You know, at the end of the day, it's all about trust. And I just want to underline, we are here to stay. We are working, we have a partnership with Malt Valley, and it's for a long time that we work together, that we are in the market, we are committed to the market. It's also the reason why Drew joined us, to be even closer to all of you, and that's also how we will go forward. You know, we will always try to lead the developments and try to add value, because we think in partnership. For us, it's very important that we bring a value to you, because a profitable agriculture makes it, of course, good for all of us to be active in, and we like what we do, you know.
Thanks for listening today. It really is much appreciated. And remember, you can pop into your local store to find out more about how Malt Valley Farmers can help you with a range of farming advice. Until next time, I'll speak to you soon.